Hello and welcome to Talking Tremors. I am your host, Steve S.S. Wilson.
I'm sorry, I did not agree to do this with Steve. Will Steve?
Yes. Hey, you know, I really like you, Thorin. Yeah.
I like you too, Steve. It's great. You look a little different than I remember when I met you at Tremors Fest, but
I got one of the doctor's old time machines and I decided to reverse age myself.
That's not how Doctor Who works at all, but cool. I'm very glad that you're able to do that, sir. But I like the mileage that you had. You know, the Indiana Jones, it's not the years, it's the mileage. You know, keeping it topical for the kids today. Is Levi gonna show up for Talking Tremors? I should do that in the Goldblum. You are gonna have Levi in your talking, and he's pantsless. What have I done? One joke that just became a running gag. Oh, hi. Hey, where did Steve go?
Oh, I think like they just went by. Did you see that? Like Steve.
I did. Steve is not wearing pants. That's cool.
That's kind of sexy. I wasn't expecting that from him. He's like a 75-year-old man.
Yeah, he's looking good for his age. You know. Yeah, I guess the S's stand for sexy, sexy Wilson.
Ooh, short stack Wilson. You know that, baby.
I don't know what that means. Hello, I'm here on the Talking of Tremors thing here. You got me. You nailed me down, finally.
Boom. It's been like a year coming. And yeah, I just really want to get into it. So yeah, this Talk of Tremors, you know who the fuck I am? But we don't know who the fuck this is. Who are you? Are you Steve?
Yeah, no, I am not Steve Wilson. I am Zoran Gavoyich, and I am, of course, the one that covered all of the Tremors kill counts for YouTube channel Dead Meat that has become, I've become synonymous with Tremors now due to that. And I'm fine with it because I love the films and I'm very happy to be associated in any way, shape, or form with the Tremors franchise.
When you're doing a Bixby with Steve, you look like his son.
Like you look like his son?
Well, no, okay, no, you don't look like Matt.
No, I don't look like Matt. Matt's in the actual Tremors movies. You look He's one like, of the cowboys.
You look like Steve ate a whole bunch of food and then coughed up another Steve, and then you grew up to be also
What
Steve.
A horrible, I evolved from Steve's vomit?
Yeah, you're like a shrieker. You're a shrieker Steve.
Oh, a year coming for this interview, huh? This is a year coming, and this is where we are. Vomit Zoran Steve Wilson.
It's no holds bar in this thing.
No, I get it. This is where we are. All right. You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
Because Caitlin, I was just going through similarities and stuff and like showing Caitlin a lot about you. And she's like, I just can't take this. Like you and Zoran are so much alike. And she literally was like, it's a lot. And I was like, fine, we're going to do this and have fun with it. And that's honestly why for the people watching at home, I have two pages. We have two pages here. We're not going to do it all, but you know, I have notes.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone needs that much Zoran information, but I'm happy to answer whatever I can.
So this is where I actually disagree, and it's kind of why I made two pages. You're an incredibly kind, caring. You give so much of yourself, Zoran. Fuck you. No. This isn't me like flattering your ass and all shit. Like I have spent the last week consuming everything of yours that I can find. Actually, the only thing I didn't get to too much was the unproduced lives.
They're long.
They are. You fucked me up by saying that the rise of Behind the Mask, the Rise of Leslie Vernon is your favorite movie. So I watched that last night, totally threw off my entire brain set. Like I just like, I shut down. Like I was just like, okay, so that happened. And now I got to deal with that. That's a fabulous film, really. And then,
there you go. I was curious. I was like, why did it shut down? I mean, it's an amazing little gem that deserves so much more recognition.
Please forgive there's a level of similarity that I saw to you and the character of Leslie Vernon, not serial killers or anything like that, but the, honestly, Nathan Basil's ability to turn on that dime of like his charisma combined with No, the glasses don't help.
No, glasses don't help. But you know, I've always got this next to me everywhere that I work. I've got Leslie Vernon's mask. And I think I just pulled the pin out of the wall, so now I have to rehang that after this. Yep, there goes the nail.
All right, cool. Watching that really messed me up in terms of like, oh my God, I can't do any more Zorin. Because Nathan Basil's ability to turn, not that I think that you're a serial killer or any of thatness, but the actingness of it really just gave me vibes of you. So
he is lovely. That's why I took his breakthrough acting class.
Oh yeah, cool.
Yeah, he got to learn from the man himself. He's a very good teacher.
And it messed me up entirely. But I was going, I just went through your entire catalog. I watched every single low carb video.
I know, I get alerts from comments that I'm just like, oh, he's just commenting on all the videos. It's like when John Massari from Killer Clowns watched all my videos. I'm like, oh, he's just going through the whole catalog. Great.
That's how that works, man. And I was like, I don't want to comment too much because I know he's going to get these. I watched that one live stream of you where you just talked for 2.5 hours. I'm absorbed in Zorin, but you're amazing is really my point of all this. Your ability to bring just what I'm not a huge horror fan, but to come into this because of the kill counts and having learned everything that I have because of Dead Meat, you made me a Dead Meat fan. I had no idea what the fuck it was before it. And just seeing you, it was the Social Media Asicus Q&A, and the way you just bring everybody underneath a banner, and like it's your freak flag, you let it fly, and just everybody's like, yeah, dude, absolutely amazing, man. Like, you should. I know you're just like, God damn it, I can't take this. Give me a question now.
I am very blessed to be surrounded by a lot of really talented people, and I have the ability to kind of organize and get things done, and I want to showcase as many of the talented folks that I know as possible, because, you know, the industry won't give them a shot unless they're already famous. So if I can elevate them, and also it's just really fun to work with, you know, your friends who are really talented and surprise you on set and everything of that nature. So I will happily work with all those people again. You see why James Gunn and other people like work with the same actors over and over again? It's because you have a rapport, you have a shorthand that's, you know, really easy and fun to work with. And basically all of Adam Sandler's later films is just him going, I want to go on vacation with my friends. Oh, and everyone's going to pay for it? Great. I'll make a movie if I have time, but mainly I'm here to hang out with my friends. So kudos to that man for figuring out how to make that his life. I really admire that.
Other people criticize that, and I'm always like, hey, that's the goal, man. Like that. Like,
I mean, he employs a lot of people. He's real good to his friends and things. And I used to, you know, not enjoy the films, and I just go, I understand what they are and what he's doing, and he's not hurting anyone, and there's people that love them, and I'll just keep going. But I would love to be able to just make movies with my friends on big budgets and just have parties and, yeah, go to exotic locations.
I'm going to start diving into questions now.
Do it. Dive.
Like I said, 2 pages. We'll call it a two-folder. What do you think is easier for you? Was it running low carb comedy or being an employee of Dead Meat? And then side question, which one do you enjoy more?
I started low carb comedy back in 2004, 2005, back when it was called Please Dear God Give Us a Job.com before YouTube. That was the original name of the website. It was Please Dear God Give Us a Job.com, because I said, I have an art degree. I'm not getting hired by anyone. I'm just going to start making sketches. And my buddy Mark Cusper was the one guy that would show up every day with a full frozen Tombstone pizza that he was just eating. And just, yeah, he would do that the whole time and just say, when are we filming today? And that's why a lot of early low carb stuff is just Mark Cusper doing things, because he just showed up and he loved doing it. He had a natural, just a wonderful natural talent for things. And yeah, from there, I just kept it going for off and on times and tried fully committing to doing stuff for about 2 years with Big Head parodies. And it just was too much work because that was hundreds of hours that I was doing myself for all the rotoscoping, graphics, motion tracking. It was just too much. And I was like, I'm saying no to life things, to sit here in my apartment and drink scotch and rotoscope things. And I'm like, I need to have actual human experiences and figure out that balance. And so I just have decided that, you know, low carb is when I can create something. But then, of course, when I started full time with Dead Meat, that's where all of my energy goes. Because any project that I do, I never half-ass. I'm always putting my whole ass into every project. It's always there. And it's easy to access because there's no pants. But I always will put all of my creative energy into things. So I put all my creative energy into kill counts and anything that I do for Dead Meat. They talk and whatever. So from there, it's a little harder to get my own stuff. And I definitely am starting to feel the itch of wanting to at least do one new project or something of my own thing when I can. So in some ways, it's easier to, I'm sorry, I drink so much seltzer really fast that I just feel like I'm just going to burp constantly. Oh my God. How about a nice, that's vodka, I assume. No, but just like working for James is, you know, easier in the way that it's very structured, kind of like I have to do this at this time and get these deadlines and go that. Whereas low carb was more my own deadlines and I had to do a lot more planning of things of that nature to try and make all that work. And, you know, sponsors and things already built in with Dead Meat and all their connections. You know, it's an established channel and mine is not as, you know, not as established because I just haven't committed fully to creating content every single week for that. But, you know, I still have it there. I still have a vast array of things that I have created on there that people can discover. And I will continue to add new things because it's just a nice venue of just like, you know, I had this idea. I'm going to make this thing and put it out there.
Way it goes. Yeah. Okay. Why did I look at that question? It was, what is your superpower? But we're just going to. No, what is your superpower? And fuck it. I looked at it. Let's go.
What is my superpower?
You like distill yourself and what you are best at. Who are you was what the follow-up was.
I don't know, making things happen. Like a lot of times, you know, you'll get people talking about ideas and things that they want to do and projects that they want to do, and then I just go, all right, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to actually make it a thing and bring all the people together that will work best for all of these things. So I have that superpower that I can actually get shit done. And I, you know, being a jack of all trades, I can work all these magical things together and make them work, you know, graphics wise, editorial, like I can do all the various jobs. I don't prefer doing all the jobs because that's a lot for one person to do, but I can. I've taught myself each of the steps of production that I can, you know, I can get stuff done.
That was one of the things when I was just going through your whole fucking catalog. And I ended up showing Caitlin because it just kept showing up, and up. Directed, written, edited, and colored by Zoran Gavojcik. And I was like, does this remind you of anybody, like right here? Because it's that's my next question. Are you a perfectionist or a control freak?
Aren't those the same thing?
There's a temptation to perfectionist where it's like, you know, you have a... like I would call Steve a bit of a perfectionist in terms of like, he knows what he wants and the vision of it, but he doesn't have, he doesn't care about having control of it. Whereas a control freak, even if they don't have vision, is like, oh, I need to be in charge of it.
I mean, I can let control go if I trust the person. It's depending on who the person is or anything like that. Again, most of the stuff that I've created has been pretty much me. For, you know, the whole process so that I can envision it. I know exactly how it's going to be cut and how it's going to work because I'm doing all the stages of it. I am definitely a bit of a perfectionist. I try and let things go. Nothing will ever be finished and nothing will ever be like, I started doing I think some passes on certain things. I'll do like I think a big heads. It was like, here's an acceptable pass. I've put all the things together, all the graphics and everything. And if I release this, probably not many people would notice. When is the release date? Oh, I got an extra day. Okay, here comes the Zorin pass of like, let me fine tune. Let me add more shadow onto this person's face because it'll make it match better. And like, there's little Zorin things that I'd be like, if I watch this video again, I'll be really annoyed that I didn't do that thing. But also, not everyone's going to notice the little details and things that I add into, you know, each of the different things there. I think I'm partially a perfectionist. I control the things that I need, but I also am very open to collaboration, especially with actors and everything, because they're going to bring things that, you know, I never imagined onto there. I always make sure that I get, obviously, the word that I've written or whatever, and being like, do you have a take on this? Give it a shot. And they'll be like, that was better than what I did. So great, that's going in, done. Or as I say, that's the one.
But I would like to end this whole thing with you doing that, by the way. And I was actually
okay.
Really,
so we're done. That's it. I said it.
All right.
Interview done. All right. Cool.
Be good people. So on that note, do you think that Tremors is a writer's or a director's franchise? And I mean this in, like, what you just said there with the, you know, making the pass and really just fine tuning it and getting it down to the wire. We both know very well what the entire behind the scenes of it all has been. Mm-hmm. And Brent, Ron, and Steve storyboard the hell out of everything before it even starts and stuff.
As do I.
I watched that social media addict mass. God damn that. You're right. That is the worst.
I wish it hadn't been that name so that people could ever remember what it is, but that's the name of the song that Morgan made. Nothing I can do about it. That's what I'm committed to.
You commit the fuck to it. And you are indeed a social media masochist. Mm-hmm. And the storyboarding of it, and this is my one criticism when I was, like I said, Don showed up in the last stream that I did, and I ended up having to like, hey, so I think you did a great job. But also, I think that Tremors, my personal idea is that Tremors is a writer's franchise, not a director's franchise, in terms of that perfectionism and making that, pun intended, perfection product. Is it a writer's franchise or a director's franchise? Or is the reason it works because of both?
I mean, there's things that are going to work for all of the things that work together. I think, I mean, I would say probably it is more of a writer's, just looking at the films and which ones were written by Brent and Steve, you know, 1, 2, and then story by for 3 and 4.
And 5.
I don't count whatever happened with 5, and I'm sure they don't count. Like, that's not what we did at all. So, you know, I think that's very good there. I think it does also, the director needs to bring things to the screen. I think Ron and Steve, and I think Brent wasn't given a fair shake with the stuff that he got to direct, because he had like the shortest budget, the largest script on Tremors 3. That he just basically probably on that just had to go, you said the words right? Go. Move to the next. That doesn't, you don't get to play. And that's where the director can kind of pull out some things and work out some different things there. And you gotta be a really strong director to also get shit done. And so you sometimes don't have a lot of time to play, and you just have to go, okay, we gotta move on. We have to move on. This doesn't work. We've gotta fix it. Great, that'll work. Moving on. It's like that. But I think some of the stronger entries were the ones that were written by Brent and Steve. They really get that tone.
Whole book about directing.
Oh, wow.
Like, this is the films of Jacques Tati is a French director.
Yeah.
This is fascinating insight into, like, it's a mathematical look at, like, dissecting comedy films. And I always feel bad that, like, he didn't get, like you just said, his fair shake on it.
Yeah, no, I don't judge that one. But, you know, some of the stuff, you know, just in 3 doesn't work as well, because I think they just did not have the time and had to just move forward and get things going. And so, you know, that's a big thing in there is time. But yes, I think the the films that work the best are the ones where it is the kind of stampede family that is together, all of them, Nancy and everyone, working together. So it is definitely a team effort, but I feel the stronger ones are the Steve and Brent written ones, because their setups, payoffs, dialogue, everything, it's all very, it's a very fine line for that style of horror and comedy and realistic characters and everything. And they walk that line very, very well. And so other actors, other writers can't nail that as much, sometimes go too comedy, too much in one direction. And so I think it does come down to them a lot.
On that note, since, what do you think of Tremors the series? Because that's the time that I feel is when other writers get to come in and start to give their flavor of Tremors, but you still have Steve and Brent kind of really overseeing things and working. One of my favorite scripts is written by a different person, A Little Paranoia Among Friends, where Bert is having to deal with a town of people who are crazier than he is, and that was written by Babs Grzyoski. What do you think of Tremors the series? Our backdoor pilot question, like, because you haven't talked about it enough, but I want to hear your thoughts on the series and its writing itself.
I was not prepared for this question. I have not watched the series since it aired first on Sci-Fi Channel. I have not rewatched the series at all. I remember, you know, my impression of it was that I wasn't a huge fan of it when I watched it when it first came out on TV. I was like, oh, this is, there's something missing here again. It had the Tremors 3 kind of feel, that there was something missing there that they just weren't able to capture, especially in, like, I was so excited for the water hazard shrimp one, because I loved the concept of the, you know, Valen Earl monster hunter show that they pitched with the old, you know, the hillbilly vampire and the octopus, wood tree octopus, all those monsters. I'm like, I love every one of these monsters and I want this show. And so when they took elements of it, I was like, oh yeah, we're finally getting that fucking cool ass shrimp. And then I see behind the scenes photos now and I'm like, that thing looked cool. Why didn't they show it? Why didn't they actually show the thing instead of just like an eye stock? And then that was it. So, you know, there's, it is due for a rewatch, but I figured that would be at a time in which I ever have to kill count that series. I would say that time would be, that would probably be my final kill count. Like, if I'm ever leaving Dead Meat, I will go, all right, sending you away with the Tremors of the series. Because also that's, you know, they're 45 minute episodes. So, you know, that's 10 hours of stuff. Ish, just rounding out like a season, 13 episodes, 45 minutes, I don't know, 9-10 hours that I have to go through and then make jokes for and summarize plot for and do all of that. So that's why TV shows aren't done a lot on the kill count. They take forever, especially the Stranger Things ones that now have over an hour and 20 minute episodes. There's like, it's a whole movie is an episode. Now we've got 10 of the, that's why those episodes are hours and hours long and it's a lot of work. But you know, I will say that, yeah, that's what I'm aiming to be my final kill count if I ever do one, would be Tremors the series, so I could revisit it and you know, give it its fair shake.
I will have to write some kill count scripts for every single episode and just send it to you then.
Well, there you go. Fan scripts written in crayon. That's what I want.
Because I do gotta say, okay, if you haven't watched it since it aired, I am a huge fan of Tremors the series. I know, mm-hmm. I understand every single one of your criticisms. And if you came at it from that, seeing it when it originally, hell, when it was out of order too, even, that it can leave a poor taste in the mouth. Watching it now, watching everything as it's meant to be watched, I really think it's well done. It's, Tremors 4 might be my favorite. I know it's, seems an odd one, and then Tremors 2 is my second favorite, but then Tremors the series just sneaks in there and might be second favorite sometimes even too. Like, there is a, it's why I wish that Tremors would, people would focus on it being a TV show rather than movies, because I think there's a width and a breadth that can happen with the characters and the idea when given a space and a format throughout that, the 45 minutes, hour.
Yeah, I just know that it was a miserable experience for them to kind of film with everything that was going on behind the scenes and having to film it down in Mexico and super tight, no budget for anything, and wanting a new monster every week, which was, I think, not what they wanted. So she was like, we don't want it to be a Monster of the Week show. And it became that.
I always feel really bad for Steve because there's a behind the scenes thing where they had to sneak guns into Mexico. And he was just like, behind the crew was selling it was like, yeah, no, we had to kind of circumvent some laws to get guns down there. And he was like, you guys did what? Like, we have tried so hard to be like pro good gun usage. And you guys just really
smuggle guns.
Like you can hear, like, I've heard in him talking in podcasts where his heart just dies a little, like, why at all did we film in Mexico? Like, and that's just Universal, NBC Universal pushed it to save money. But like I said, that takes a bunch of my questions away, so that's fine.
There you go. Sorry to take those questions away, but it deserves a rewatch. I can always adjust my opinion and everything, but I have not watched it since it aired.
I would, as massive Tremors fans, I would highly recommend it. It's because I got to say, last thing on it, I think that the pairing of Bert and Tyler is one of the best, besides like Val and Earl. Bert and Tyler is some of the best chemistry duo that we get throughout the whole franchise. Mm-hmm. Like, I gotta put my thought in for it. I wanted to jump from there. So then we're talking about all this horrible, awful behind the scenes stuff of Tremors. You know, we both know that there should be games made, that there should be merchandise made. Do you think that there's anything nefarious happening with Tremors in terms of Universal? Or is it just simply just people being dumbasses and not knowing what they have and letting it slip through their fingers?
Yeah.
How much everybody cares. Like, I can't say Don doesn't care. I was talking to Cher Stallings. Like, God, she was so heartbroken when that news of, like, 1440 closed.
Yeah.
And Tremors movies. And just hearing her. And she was coming up with, she wanted to do Tremors in Space. She's the one that asked, Bill Watterson to do his Tremors script. And I see these people that are actually involved with it giving a shit, but then what I would call money people just not caring at all.
No, like, but that's the studio. The studio system is run by they're not creative people. They're not the people that make the movies. They're business. It's all a business. It is like and that's why we want an algorithm that tells us exactly what will be profitable. We want to predict. We want a safe bet. Because they're betting and they have to, you know, make money. It's just like, we're betting $100 million that this thing's going to go well. Hey, it made $1 billion. Good. That covers our other movies that didn't do so well, or, you know, whatever it is. But it's absolutely a business. And each one is a decision that they're not fans. I mean, there are fans in there, but also you don't have control between departments and things like that. So, for example, like, For Dead Meat, we did the Chucky TV show. We did the official, like, after show interviews for it. So signed on, was working with Universal for that. But all the Chucky recounts that we were doing were all getting flagged by Universal.
Yeah.
Because their movie department is completely separate from their TV department. Like, one hand does not know what the other hand is doing, and being like, they're like, can you help us? We're trying to promote your show. And he's like, oh yeah, well, that's movies, and they're a completely different thing. So even when you're working with a specific company that's hiring you to do a thing, there's another section that doesn't know or care about what this other section's doing. They're all just doing their individual things, and they're always going to pick the safest bets for whatever it is. And, you know, we got a lot of Tremors content in various ways. Who knows if the IP comes back again, because this is the time of IPs, and, you know, they can crank out even more things, or they can reboot it, or they can figure out what needs to be done with it. But I think the people that worked on it did have an affinity for the franchise. Otherwise, it wouldn't come back in that way. But, you know, times change and the movies need to change, too.
I would just die if Tremors became the new Fast and Furious. I don't care what happens to make that happen. That would just be...
I just want to know what happened with Sci-Fi. I'm pretty sure Sci-Fi Channel with the Kevin Bacon pilot. It's like, you want, Kevin Bacon wants to make a monster movie. Give him one season. Just give him one season rather than we have a pilot, not even going to air the pilot. Like, not even, it's insane to me that, you know, it cannot be that bad. We've seen some bad Tremor stuff, that can't be that bad to see that. And I assume that it's just Sci-Fi Channel tends to, you know, want a lower budget thing, and probably Kevin Bacon would have been too expensive.
I hope so. It's either that, or I have this strong feeling after everything I've seen that it's a Batgirl situation where they've reached the point of tax dodge, and just like if they ever show it, they lose the tax money from it. I know Arrow Video tried to get it for the 4K release that they did.
So good. Oh my God.
And all that I've seen and all that I do with Tremors, man, like that right there, if you put the Kevin Bacon pilot on a DVD, a Blu-ray or Tremor, it doesn't matter. Gangbusters. That would just fucking sell like crazy.
And that's what they're waiting for. They're holding back. Like, we had one new deleted scene each release, and then we'll have you buy that same movie over and over again.
I've actually talked to Vincenzo Natale behind the scenes, and he is really despondent that it'll never get seen. That he's tried to do what he can as the director or whatever, and they're just like, nope, there's not a single thing that anybody can do to make it happen. And I want to say that maybe Kevin Bacon was too expensive, but I also know that he was trying for that so hard that I feel like he couldn't have taken a pay cut. Like, if you asked him, like, hey, Kevin, you really want to do this? Let's like cut your pay. Yeah, let's say it. That's not a Kevin Bacon impression. which is my one criticism for that show, is that Kevin Bacon is playing Val, but he's not. He doesn't sound like Val at all. He just sounds like older Earl, which maybe was part of the concept or whatever. I don't think it'll ever happen. Honestly, I think we'll get a Tremors 8 before we will ever see the Kevin Bacon pilot. And on that note, if you could rewrite one piece of Tremors canon, what would it be? And I now realize I know what your answer is going to be, but yeah, go ahead.
I mean, aside from the way they ended everything?
Well, see, that's, you and I have both talked to Michael. We've heard enough to know that, like, that possibility is enough.
But I'm saying in their world, like, Don chose to go for the emotional, like, he claims, he's like, I wanted to go for the emotional kind of ending. And I was like, cool. No, that Bert's death fucked me up. I did, like I said, I was just like, watched that movie and went upstairs and could not fall asleep. I was so angry and just like, God, like he was the thing that was getting me through the next, those later films, having him as a present there. And that's what I wanted. So that, yes, that's 100% what I would change in there completely.
It's the whole reason I'm here. Like, I saw that movie on a Saturday and I was like, what the fuck is this? And then I went and researched that. I found out everything that's ever happened about Tremors, and I just, I put on a mask, so to speak. And okay, obviously that. So then what's your second thing that you would rewrite as canon?
I don't want to mess with their writing.
We'll just go on then. That's fine. I appreciate it.
I don't know. Long gestating Tremors, Graboid Venom. The venom that sits in your system for, 30 years and then, like, starts to make you have editing sickness. Yeah, I'm just like, nah, I don't know about the science of that. And then also probably the lack of Shrieker evolution, like changing the evolution for the African Graboids. I actually don't mind these redesigns. Actually, I think they did a very good job redesigning them and making them more vicious and bad at, like, where they're flipping through the dirt and everything like that. Didn't mind that. didn't really like the ass blaster design. It felt a little too Langoliers, like, yeah. Vagina dentata teeth thing. And I loved finally in Tremors Fest, I don't know if I told this to anyone else, but yeah, just that Don Michael Paul said the reason that there weren't shriekers in that was we didn't have the budget. It was like, we get to redesign the creature. We can't have three different CGI designs. It was like, we'll go with the flying ones. We'll go with this. That's it. We did not have money to do the shriek. That was the only reason they were eliminated. And then they brought them back later and then had the, I guess that's the other canon bit too, is they changed it so that their screams were actually talking to each other or something like that, where I'm like, no, it's the heat. Like, you very specifically said it's the heat. It's when you contradict the, you know, previous films that the true fans care about. Not saying not all fans are true fans or anything. I'm just saying, like, we're just like, we are so steeped in it, being like, nope. And that's why I think Michael Gross, he said he was the keeper of Bert and everything. He's like, nope, that wouldn't happen. This wouldn't happen. That wouldn't, you know. And even, you know, as Steve and them have said, like, they messed up between 2 and 3 with, like, how many shriekers come out of the, or, like, anywhere between 3 and, you know, 6 bags, sacks or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, there's little continuity things like that. Yeah, so there's a few things that I would rewrite in there. The big one being, I don't want Bert to go away.
Honestly, I thought you were going to pick Jamie Kennedy as Travis. So that was a bit of a surprise there.
Jamie was doing what he could with what he had. And as I was not a fan of a lot of the stuff that he added, as I've been very vocal on the Tremors things, I don't fault him for an actor for agreeing to, like, if I was being like, hey, you want to be in a Tremors? Yes, I will be in a Tremors movie. The movie might be terrible, but I was like, I signed on because I want to be in Tremors. And, you know, there are good moments of the juxtaposition of Bert and Travis that I do enjoy. But there's also just a lot of cringy moments for me of some of his humor and things of that nature of, you know, just not for me, just Jamie Kennedy style, not for me.
I get
it. I don't think he's a bad person. He's an actor and he's agreed. And I'm glad he stood his ground and said, you're not paying me less for the 7th one than I did for the last one. So he's not coming back for that.
Less than what they paid him on 5, not even the last one. It was less.
Ridiculous. You don't pay them less each movie. It's equal or more.
Like, if you expect him to, like, oh yeah, you're going to be the new Bert, then. So then, like, pay me what you think that's worth. Like, that's where I totally agree with Jamie on that. Like, that's just painful. Like, ouch. Yeah, fuck that, man. Like, I mean, it ruins the movie. And that was actually when I was talking to Don. It was like, hey, listen, I can't abide by this decision. Like, if you had Travis in 7, then there's a level of what happened I would accept. But you should have just changed the movie.
Emotional beat would have hit a little harder on that one. And actually meant something instead of, I knew this guy for 3 days. He gets to put my hat on the cross. Cool. Great. Nice to see you, John Heater. Fine, but why?
His ex-lover, like, gets the hat. I'm always like,
not even her. Yeah, that one that slightly has a connection. It's just this guy that hung out gets to do it. Oh, that means very little, very little. All these people are really sad that Bert has passed. And I'm just like, yeah, you didn't really know Bert that much.
I did wag my finger at Don for that a little bit. Mm-hmm. I passes on other things. We'll go backwards a little bit. So in your low-carb comedy videos, you have a reoccurring bit with Jigsaw.
For a long time, yeah.
And I asked you this at Tremors Fest, but you were like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm going to ask it again just to really, like, get. Jigsaw is constantly referring to how his wife is, like, out with Bert. You're always, Bert's the manly man. Bert knows how to be a real man better than you do. It's like this constant thing that's happening. And I have to say this, it is in every single one. And then in the final one, like, I kidnapped Zoran Gavoyjic, and have you ever seen that movie Tremors? And I'm just like, okay, Jigsaw, were you, like, you said you weren't referencing Bert, but Are you sure about that?
Well, here's the thing. I've now reached the point that I've created so many things that I don't remember what you're talking about fully. I know Jigsaw's wife, and I can't even remember her name right now. I just know that she calls Jigsaw, oh, Jigalicious Sawyer, or whatever stupid name that was. That's just improvising with my buddy Charlie Carroll, who's in tons of videos. He was just improvised off screen with me as Jigsaw's wife, and I liked making him a family man, and he loved his wife very much. I don't think it was Bert. I think it was Burke.
No, it was Bert.
It was Bert.
I heard it a year ago when I first started looking up your life, and then when I just went through it this week, I was like, that's Bert. He's saying Bert. I can hear.
Okay, I thought it was Burke because there was an improviser in our class named Burke, and that was probably what we were referencing. But if you're saying it's Burt, sure. But I think it was very much an improv thing. It is not a conscious Tremors reference that I put in there, and I don't even remember referencing Tremors in any of the Saw videos. You're saying I did?
Did you legit? You need to go back and watch your own shit again.
I made a lot of stuff a long time ago. And this is where I'm like, okay, now I understand why Christopher Lloyd, when I saw him in person one time and someone was like, hey, quote that line from Back to the Future. And he's like, I don't remember. That was like 40 years ago. And now he's like, oh, this is important. I better learn all of these lines again or something like that. That I'm just like, oh, I understand. It was like, I did that thing. I don't remember why we made that choice or what it was. And you know, same with like when I asked Steve Wilson, like, why Bixby? And he's like, I have no idea. You've made Bixby a more important thing than anything. We were just literally like, that sounds like a town in Nevada. Done.
Well, I'm
I'll rewatch them and see if I made a Tremors specific. I don't think that I did. I mean, I've always loved Tremors, so I always try and fit something in there, but I did not consciously make the person that Jigsaw's wife cheats with named Bert.
Seemed like a masculinity thing, so I get it. But also, like, right. It's been a long time. I mean, you're 40? Is my other question? Sorry, it's just, I have this big, like, I don't mean to, like, I just have to, oh my God, man.
That's supposed to be a secret, so shut up. You know, I'm a man hosting a YouTube show from time to time. I try not to say what my age is. If you watch any of my references, you understand that. But yeah, no.
That made sense. And I was just like, oh my God, what the fuck, man? And I feel really bad. I just turned 32 on the first. So it's just like, oh, what the? You are a beautiful, majestic baby feet.
Thank you. I've been very blessed. And that's the only way I can survive in this town is that I have a very, very youthful look and also decorations of all kinds of toys and things behind me. So
your personality more than makes up for it. Just like, holy shit. And that was, I didn't mean to just drop that, but I just had to, what the fuck?
That's fair.
And I can tell you want to strangle me right now. I'm not sorry. It took a lot to finally pin that number down. Totally jumping tracks then. Zombie ship.
Oh, wow. That's an old one, too.
It's been a week of just your shit, so forgive me.
You didn't have to watch all my stuff. Thank you for watching all. Even that's my sketch group, the long pork stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, I do it for everybody, but then they reached about a halfway point. Where I was watching the Q&As with you and just how much everybody loved you and how much you've done behind the scenes. And it's like, no, we're gonna do this right. And that's how we go, Zoki. Which is, that was another Zoki Doki, man.
Oh, yes. The name that I went by until I graduated college. And then I went by Zoran again. Legal name, yeah. Zoran. Nickname for Zoran in Serbia is Zoki. And so I used to be Zoki. And you'll hear that around.
How's Cusper?
Oh, Cusper, he's great. He's that man is always in the best mood possible all the time. Just answer the call him on the phone, and he's just like, "Oh, what's up? Hey, Well, what's happening, Duke? All right, let's do that. So I'm actually going to see him in August for the Dude Bro Party Massacre screenings that they're doing in Colorado. He lives up in Colorado now, so I'm going to go see him and my buddy Mark Kleinfelder, who does all the sound mixing for all the videos and is just so freaking talented, that guy. And my buddy Scott, who's in videos as well.
How's
so
Lee?
Great. He's always happy. Lee Russell?
Yeah, of course.
Out in LA now. If you have ever seen, look for CC's Pizza ads. He's the current mascot for CC's Pizza, which is hilarious to me. He's like a top-hatted, like mustached fellow. Then that's Lee Russell talking about CC's Pizza. That was the latest thing that he'd landed. And yeah, he's still doing things, living out here with his wife and his daughter and having time. See him on Fortnite all the time. I think we're going to go see the new Transformers movie together because we have AMC passes and we feel, why the fuck not? I was a big fan of Beast Wars, the animated show growing up. So I'm like, this is how you get me back in, you bastards. You show me Optimus Primal and Rhinox and all right, fine. I'm in for it. And you know, with the AMC pass, I'm just like, if it's awful, I just walk out and I don't care.
Really showing your age now. So we're back here in time. Mm-hmm. Not only what was it like, but what was it like meeting Steve Wilson for the first time dressed as a Graboid?
That was glorious. In Chicago, I got to meet him at a screening of Tremors, and we had the full Graboid costume that my friend Lana Crooks had painstakingly made. She was still not happy with how it turned out. I was like, this is glorious. I was very happy with it. Took two people to operate. And when we heard that there was a Tremor screen, I'm like, you know what? Let's cart this thing out, do a little video. And yeah, that was lovely. And then became Facebook friends with him, contacted him off and on with comments and things, nothing much. And then, yeah, getting to actually see him at Tremors Fest and talk to him was very amazing. And the fact that he's a fan of all the kill counts and it says I have mostly accurate information. There was a few things that I got right. He actually asked me recently because he's going to do a commentary track, I think, for Tremors 2.
Oh.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but he asked me about like one of the things, like that song, you said that it wasn't Jay Ferguson's. And then I asked Jay Ferguson, like, yeah, he did that song. And I was like, oh, I just assumed because it wasn't like the orchestral score that it was like, just, you know, some pop song that you'd had licensed or anything. He's like, I don't think we licensed anything. And I'm like, oh, but you did license Travis Tritt's Trouble from like one of those sections for the big blowing up everything section. He went, you're right, I did do that. But the other thing is Jay's, so I'm not going to change that one. I'm like, okay, great. That was totally an assumption on my part that I assumed. Yeah.
And actually, I did know that. I think Arrow is doing a remaster of Tremors 2. Steve was telling me that.
Well,
so
time to go buy another one.
I think they have some deleted scenes even too. So
awesome. I will happily do that. And hopefully it's in 4K so I can really see that van driving in the background of one of the shots, just in their isolated areas. They're like, we got to wait for them to show up for us. Van driving in the distance.
Which I can't see on my copy. I'm always looking, but I think I have a 720.
Oh, you can see it. It's very much like, you have to be looking for something, but it's more of like a reflection kind of like shine is like happening when you see something moving past. It's not blatantly like a car pulls up right behind them and a crew member's eating a sandwich.
Which is, like I said, I have so many questions, so I'm piecing them all and jumping around. So how many of the undone Tremor scripts have you read?
The undone Tremor script? The only one, I've never read a full one. I read Steve did a big interview about Gummer Down Under that highlighted a lot of scenes.
That one up. That was all me. That was, okay. Oh yeah, I did. Oh, that's a great one. Like
It gave me all the highlights of everything, like the Gatling gun in the back of the truck, like salmon jumping baby graboids that I'm like, oh, I would love to see that. Oh, this seems fun. I would love to see a lot of these things. Oh, well.
Oh, so you don't, you've never read the Tremors 2, the Lost Monster script then?
No, I didn't know there was an actual script for that.
Bro, I've literally done a script reading episode on this fucking podcast. Like, just
well,
as a,
there you go.
Like, it's no, seriously.
Understand there's how much media is out there and how much time I need to devote to Fortnite.
Diablo is sitting down there staring at me, and it's been a week of updating, and I have the slowest internet connection, so I get it.
I just made level 40, and I got my horse in Diablo 4, so I'm very happy.
But oh my god, I thought you would. I'm sorry, this is why it's a question. I assumed.
No, I have not read any of those scripts. I have not searched them out. I think I saw one for Tremors, but it was pretty much close to it. Like, it wasn't different that I like skimmed through. I was like, nah, this seems pretty much the same. It was probably a later draft.
The Tremors 2 one is about, it, again, it's just like an alternate world where Val and Earl are down there hunting Shriekers in the regular Tremors 2 movie.
But I feel like a majority of it is going to be very similar. No?
You think that it feels like it, but really just like those two being together gives the whole thing a different flair and a flavor. And I had so much fun pretending to be Val and Earl and listen to me, Earl, you got to stupid son of a bitch. And just like jumping back and forth.
Earl sounds like Yosemite Sam.
I did this one time already, you son of a bitch. Ah, damn, dude, I will send it to you.
Great. I will happily look at it.
Yeah, because I got that one, and then I got the Kevin Bacon pilot script released too. It's all part of the mask. Oh, wow, shit. That just totally throws my brain off. I thought you knew more of that. That's cool. Okay, we're just... Do you think that Val and Earl could be bisexual?
Sure, I don't know. I'm not question. I don't know what this is. Your question. It's your question.
You're a huge Tremors. Trying to, I trust your opinion.
I mean, they have a lovely bromance that goes on there, and you know, love is love. So whatever they're feeling, if they want to snuggle up in a sleeping bag together, by all means. I don't know. It seems that. Val is very specifically, he has a lot, his very specific criteria for women that he likes, and he's with Rhonda and he's very happy, and Earl also very happy with Kate. So I was like, they present heterosexually, and I just accept that that's how they seem to be, you know. He's looking at her butt and she's looking at his butt. There you go. That's the relationship there.
I thought
that find someone that likes looking at your butt. There it is. All right. Put your butt down. God damn
it. You don't want to see my low brass? Tuba player.
Oh boy.
No, it's been presented to me in enough situations, and I trust your opinion that I had to be like, are they maybe?
I'm going based off what I see on screen that they present heterosexually, but who knows what their life was before, and you know, the cold night, something might happen.
In the original script, obviously Rhonda's not there, and it's a whole like, oh, I didn't think I was good enough for her. So it's like, oh, maybe that carried on. I don't know. It's just a weird question.
Yes, it is.
So why did Wilford Brimley call you the fucking red flannel?
My first PA job in LA. And my only PA job, actually. It's the first and only one. I was looking for any kind of work, and my buddy Michael Rousselet hooked me up, and I was doing I was a production assistant on a diabetes commercial, the famous Wilford Brimley diabetes commercials. And I was basically just stationed by a craft service table, just like keep it stocked, get the snacks for everybody, drinks. There it is. We placed it on this little porch just outside of this house that they were filming in, next to this big window. I'm just there. I'm hanging out. They're filming inside. I'm just basically monitoring outside, hanging out, talking to people out there, not in a loud tone or anything like that. Someone comes out and says, yeah, you got to move. you're in the eye line of Wilford Brimley. He's all the way across like a full room at this table, but his chair is seated and he can look through this window and he can just see the red flannel. And the guy said, yeah, he said, who's the fuck in the red flannel? Get him out of here. So then I was forced to move away from that window and not be at craft service anymore, because this is the exact flannel that he called me a fucking flannel for. I've had it since Wilford Brimley called me that.
Oh, that was okay.
And that is a man that I respect entirely. I watched how that commercial was being filmed and everything, and he was a professional that was just like, I'm not going to fuck around. He's like, all right, I said my line. I did my take. We're good. And he's like, oh, can we do another one of those? Why? That's it. He just was like, why? He's like, oh, well, they were saying that the director was a little meek and I don't know, was intimidated by Wilford Brimley, which rightfully so, you should be. That man is a legend. And it's just like, oh, well, they're just saying maybe we should have a little quicker. He's like, you want it faster? Great, let's do it. He just did it again. And he's like, just say it. Just fucking say what you need. And he was just like not messing around. He's like, I'm going to get this done. Let's move on. I got other things to do in my life. So definitely respect that man and very honored that I got called a fucking flannel and we'll wear that proudly.
So does your comedy ever spill over into your real life to the point where you annoy your wife with your ridiculousness?
Yes.
Yes. You hear that, Caitlin? Ha!
That doesn't mean it's okay. That just means it's going to happen. I mean, she agreed to marry a comedian and we have a running bit where whenever she tries to do a joke and I don't understand it, she goes, I'm allowed to do jokes too. Which she is. And she's very good. But she makes me laugh unlike any other human being on this planet. And it's literally just from her reactions to things that it's just like makes my heart very happy and smiling whenever she can make me laugh like nobody else. Whereas I'm like, figure out the bit. There's the joke. Here's the witty line. They're saying that. There, delivered. And sometimes she'll laugh and other times she'll just go, just like pat me and just go, very good. Very good. You did your joke. It's like, yes, I did. I executed it.
I'm going to ask it. So do you ever feel inferior to your wife and that like that's the reason you chose that person because she makes you want to be better? Oh my God, Megan, if you're watching, I watched Disadvantage. I watched all her singing bits.
Oh wow. Okay, cool.
I got distracted. I was like, oh, she got YouTube.
She's a very distracting woman. That's true. I'm distracted by her.
Got it. Oh, okay.
No, I do not feel inferior. I feel that's a negative connotation of kind of how it is. I mean, I very much feel that we are equals and, you know, we're each stronger at certain things than the other, but that's what makes us really good partners. And we fully respect each other. And there's nothing that I see that could ever stop us in this world of like just anything that we can get through anything that life throws at us, we're going to be able to get through together because we just have when you find that person, she's my person. She is 100% my person. And it's never really a power dynamic thing. One has the upper hand or one is, you know, better than that. But, you know, there's times that I'm going to fuck up and not clean what I said that I would. And just like, oh, shit, I said that I was going to do that thing. And then I didn't and I fucked up. So I will go take care of that thing that I said that I would do and then didn't do. But, you know, it's communication, man. Just communication. That's what's going to happen. Just don't keep things from each other and, you know, talk it out. This is your person.
Oh, my God. I can't wait to show Caitlin this bit. Sorry. Okay. I when I met Megan at Tremors Fest, it was just like a click kind of thing. Where just like, oh, of course, that makes so much sense.
I mean, I guess I would say I could feel inferior with her social skills. She's very much more social than I am and can just like make anyone feel welcome and bring people together and everything very much. Whereas I'm a little more shy, actually, in situations in real life. And then we'll come out of my shell for whatever it is. But I was just like, I don't want to bother anybody. I'm just going to be over here.
Meeting you guys at Tremors Fest, it was just like I had my expectations of you, and then Megan just came in, and I was like, oh, that it gave me that feeling that I have where it's like inferior is the wrong term, but I always feel like, and I imagine Megan feels the same way going towards you, where it's just like I'm with that person because they want to make me better, or they make me want to make me better, and you're just always trying to climb that ladder of like, you're awesome, boom, you're awesome. And yeah, I just had to personally shout out how much I loved you too on the show. Like that was just, I did. It was adorable. So what I wanted to ask what you thought of Tremors Fest, but you have an entire 16-minute video of.
Yeah, there's a little video on that.
There's a on that. Just shah, blah, blah, blah. So Burt Gummer, do you think that the franchise of Tremors has been hindered by the focus on Burt Gummer? And I love Michael Gro, I would love to see Burt and everything. I don't want him to be dead or whatever. But there's that section of the fan base, and maybe I see it because of my interaction with that all the time, that's just like, oh god, like Burt's not the only thing about this.
Yeah.
And they take that gun nut thing, which is supposed to be a parody and a satire, and they make it a real thing. Do you think that Tremors has been hindered by focusing on the Burt character, especially in these last movies?
I mean, I think it's what made those last movies watchable for me, was that it was Burt and everything that, you know, connected it, and the evolution of his character, and that they did try and actually present him with some different things to, you know, get through. I would definitely be curious if there was something that, it's just those later movies didn't introduce enough stronger characters that I think could carry a movie on their own, and that's where it's difficult to leave that behind, and also to have a brand new set of cast and everything is a difficult thing for a movie later for everyone to accept it and go with it and go, okay, let's see what it is, because people get attached to that one character and be like, no, we need to see them in this over and over and over again, and this is what we want. But yes, I think that there's other things that they could explore, and I would be interested in watching a brand new cast not connected to perfection, you know, along the ways of, you know, Star Wars, I think, is hindered because they're so beholden to the Skywalkers that it shows up in everything, that I'm like, no. This is a giant universe that you have created. Tell me a story in this universe that doesn't relate to the fucking Skywalkers. And so I would very much like to see something and see if it can be done. It might be terrible. Who knows? But the problem is you got to create very interesting characters and figure out a situation that these things haven't been in before. So it's just like, all right, what do we do now? Do we put them in water? Do we put them in space? Do we put them in a Toys R Us? I don't know. So yeah, I mean, I think 5, 6, and 7 are better because Burt is in it. And, you know, I will happily watch Michael Gross because he's just a great actor to watch, whether it's in this or other things. I will happily watch that man. Very committed, very talented. But yeah, I mean, I'd say in some ways, sure, the franchise as a whole couldn't really spin off and do other things. I feel the next thing that they're possibly going to do is just reboot the whole thing, which could be not a bad thing in some ways. I mean, there's only so much that you can do with continued continuity. The one that's done it the best is, of course, Chucky back there. That is the pinnacle of how to continue a franchise and change the tone of the franchise. Like, some of them are true horror, some are pure comedy, just always evolving and always changing and always doing different commentary on things. So, I mean, Child's Play is one of the series that is amazing. And that's also because it's been the same writer since the beginning. It's been Don Mancini has just shepherded that and experimented and made it all work very, very well. So it's possible to do it, but also I think there needs to be experimentation and try something else and see how it goes. I don't want to follow Travis on any of his adventures. When I saw that Gummer reality show ending on Tremors 5, that I'm like, is this a thing? Are we getting this? I don't want this. Please?
I always feel that Tremors 4 set it up enough that the best bet is everybody wants to go to space. And I'm like, yeah, let's go to the past first. Let's do Graboids and Ancient Egypt, Shriekers and Samurai Japan, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
Germany, you know,
that's kind of what the Predator franchise is kind of seems to be going for now, with going back to that one. And that was a very successful one. It's a very tricky line. Anytime you do a sequel, sequels are very hard because you're trying to balance of like what's expected and what's the thing. Because I get a little groan worthy when, you know, they fit the lines in there sometimes of like, oh, he said the line again or whatever it is, that I'm just like, ah, we don't need that. Come up with some new lines. Same character, great, but let's move forward and do some different things. But then other people are like, yeah, he said the line. It's the best movie ever. So you have to balance, you know, whatever it is. It's each their own of what that is. And there's good ways of weaving that stuff in, and, you know, other ways. Like, I think one of the best reboots is the Evil Dead reboot from 2013, which now the director is saying isn't a reboot, that it actually takes place in the same timeline, but just later. I'm like, sure, but to me it was like a reboot. Well done. The basic concept was there, and they had odes and nods to the original that weren't like overt, and it was its own story based on that. So you, if you do a reboot, you really need to take the core essence of what that is and then redo something new. Don't just do the same fucking scenes again because you have CGI now. It's my problem with the Nightmare on Elm Street reboot, is they just redid so many scenes. I'm like, yeah, it's that iconic scene. Let's make a new thing, but with this concept of, you know, a dream killer, or, you know, an underground monster attacks normal everyday people. See how that goes.
Yeah, I've always thought that what makes Tremors 1 and then 2 and then 4 to this aspect so great is that when you don't know something is happening and having to learn the rules, that's like one of the strengths of Tremors. Of Steve talks about it, where it's like, oh, you know, we know the rules, but the characters don't know the rules. It's like a vampire movie, and watching them figure out the rules is really fun, and that's what makes it entertaining.
It's a little truncated sometimes. It seems like they figure out the rules very quickly sometimes, like, oh, this and this and this and this, we all figured out these things, and then we're moving on and we established it. But yeah, I mean, that's one way of going about it, is seeing how someone in this situation handles it differently than the other ones. But I always will love the Tremors way of, we have a plan fails, like another plan fails, another plan fails, god damn it. It's just, I just love everyone just being like, we got this. Fuck, we don't got this.
Is Tremors basically an ad for why improvisation is the most important skill?
That's very fair. Yeah, you got to yes and that shit if you're going to make a potato gun in a junkyard. Yes, and Nestor was an alcoholic.
Which I always love is a bit of like reverse canon establishment, where it's like, oh, that's why he like didn't think to like get up besides the tire. He was kind of drunk at the time, like, cause they're dropping beers and Changs before everything like goes to shit.
I mean, like, I think Val and Earl are drunk for a good majority of that.
Woohoo! Graboids! Jesus Christ. Okay, so do you think that Tremors, I mean, and this, this question was partly inspired by watching The Rise of Leslie Vernon. Do you think that Tremors could be epic or sentimental? Like, do you think, like, there's that, like, I that Fast and that Furious, or that, what the hell am I thinking of? Where, like, I'm focusing in on the, like I said, I'm not all there in terms of it. This is two pages of insanity. And, like, because it's such a parody homage, do you think it can ever reach that level of like, oh man, this is actually epic and cool? And I know you've got 20 minutes left. Was that you?
Yes, I was just trying to be nonchalant about it. You'd have to call it out. I was just reminding you of the time you were so talking and into everything that I was like, just so you're aware,
See it
there is a
coming.
time I will have to run away.
I got my timer right down here.
Run in the speaker, run through the desert, like that commercial.
You got a goddamn plan. Do you think it could ever be truly epic or sentimental? That seems like completely
I think
opposite.
it is. I don't understand what the question is. I think Tremors 1 is epic and sentimental. I think it has
Realize
both aspects of it.
like there is that, like it's like, oh wow, that it, yeah, I guess everybody always calls it so cheesy and stuff that it seems like it can't reach beyond that it's just a campy thing, but it is. That's
I don't
that.
think it's self-aware cheesy. When I think of something cheesy, I think of it like Batman 60s, where it knows what it is and it's doing its thing. Whereas Tremors is like, I think all the actors are legitimately creating real people in this ridiculous situation and reacting as if these characters would. Some people say that the effects are cheesy now because it's been many, many years and it's their very limited movement of like, we got to get this thing to come out. Great. But the editing, the miniatures, everything they did, I still think holds up and makes it look much better than a CGI thing where CGI does not age. I think practical effects, I can always appreciate what they were able to do with everything there.
That also answered my question. Is practical effects better than CGI? So, shit, done.
They're not, one's not better than the other. They're tools that need to be worked together. So, obviously the greatest one of that is Jurassic Park. Use the limitations of the CGI as like, well, the CGI sometimes looks really shiny in close-up shots. Well, it's at rain. Okay, if it's raining, then it's okay that it looks shiny. And using things of like, hey, here's a practical T-Rex head that leaves the frame. And when it leaves the frame, the CGI one walks through it so that they're blending those things together. And then also CGI, like, people say CGI, like in Social Media Masochist 2, I filmed practical elements on a green screen and then comped them all together from thing. I filmed the decapitation of Michael Myers. Some are like, oh, that's CGI or whatever. I'm like, no, it's not. It's all elements that were filmed, but then I used the computer to blend them together and add a little more, movement and things to it to make it feel better than if I had just on the day had a head with a blood spurting thing that I had to time it all so that this thing popped off at the same time that the blood came out. And yeah,
I
practical
think
effects are very time consuming and don't always work. And then you're fucked when they don't. Like the sorry, going back to Social Media Masochist, when Jason cuts off his wedding ring. That's a practical hand. And the magnet that we used to attach the finger was too strong. So it would not like come off very easily. And so we did, I want to say like 25 takes or something like that. And it was the absolute last take that we did that we got it. Because it's also awkward to do this. Like instead of chopping, like the side of the knife would have been easier to hit. It was like, all right, I'm trying to pin this tiny little point of the knife into this area to separate this magnet. So I made it really difficult. Didn't realize that that would be so difficult. And we shot it over 2 days, failed at the office, and then recreated it in the backyard of the 5SF house, that shot where it actually hits. And we got it on the very last take. I was so thankful. I'm like, I could try and make the other ones work with some rotoscoping and maybe I'll add some digital blood or something, but I'm glad it all worked.
One of the best, I think, is in Tremors 4, where that bridge scene where
Oh, that's fucking beautiful. The little miniature underneath the live action plate of them going across the bridge, and that thing just goes through the dirt. It's
so
brilliant.
yeah, there's a place for
Yeah.
it.
Practical effects allows for a lot more creativity and ingenuity where they have to, like, we've got to figure out how to figure out this problem now. Whereas most of the time, the CGI is like, eh, we'll deal with it later. Like, film this thing, and then that it's their problem. And then we can futz with it forever and do whatever we need to do. When it's a we'll fix it in post style thing, not as interesting. When it's on set, like even James Gunn always had a person on set for Rocket, as well as like a stand-in, like furry full built rocket that was there for like, all right, we got the lighting reference, everything, like here's how it moves, here's how the lighting, so that they do that. When it's just like nothing or just a ball, the animators are just like, we're trying to figure out how the fuck to make this thing look like it's in the scene, but it just will sometimes never work that way, and it's a lot more work.
God damn, that didn't, awesome answer. You asked, I want to flip it around to you. What do you think is the theme of Tremors?
The theme of Tremors? I mean, it depends on which composer. Are we talking about Ernest or? The theme of Tremors. I mean, I guess it is boiled down to literally, it's as has to be Bert's line. It just has to be doing what I can with what I got. Like that is a life lesson, and that is all that it is. It'd be like, we have to do this. Here's what we have. Let's make it work. That's wonderful words to live by, and I think that is a solid theme for Tremors, and you know, just the triumph of the human spirit, that when you work together, you can succeed. Ridiculous situation, doesn't matter, that whatever the situation is, a community, it's a community spirit. Themes of community are always a really good thing. And then, yeah, that's what I'll give you for that one.
That's, thank you. Answer. I'm going to go back to it. I'm going to do it. So do you think that, talk about it as a community, is Tremors an LGBTQ friendly franchise? I've found this because of learning about horror, as I have because of you and Dead Meat and everything, that the queer aspect of it is so huge with it. What you were talking about with Don Mancini, and just like, it, while it may not, like, we were like, it's not Val and Earl are presenting heterosexual or whatever, is there a level of this being an absolutely friendly to everybody franchise? I use that LGBT thing because it's just easy to label it like that. But is the community aspect of this mean everybody's involved? Everybody means something.
I mean, yeah, I don't think anyone's gonna matter. I will say, you know, representation is light in the Tremors films because of just the time that they were created, when, you know, the 90s, that was, you know, it'd be nice to see more diverse characters dealing with that. But I don't think anyone was unaccepting of anyone for whatever they were. And yeah, I think it could be a good metaphor for bringing together a community of whoever you are. It doesn't matter. In this situation, we all need to work together to make this happen. And if you're going to hold on to your hate and your prejudices and any of your, you know, shit, you're not going to live. And that's why those people get eaten by the Graboid. I'm like, oh no, you're a bad person, you go away. But it's a triumph of the good people working together. And then, you know, sometimes good people will get lost in there. I mean, I'm no expert to speak on anything of this variety, but I think that there's a lot of opportunity there for that. And I would very happily watch more representation in these films, but they're again a product of their time, of this is what was accepted on screen and everything of that nature. And I'm sure, you know, as my dad always says, if I knew better, I'd do better.
Oh, that one, that's a goodie.
Yeah, so it's from the old George Gavoyich.
Thanks, George. So what's your favorite creature in the whole, in all of it, and we can include the TV show that you've never watched?
I love Wildfire the Ostrich. No.
The two male ostriches, you mean, that are clearly gay?
Yeah, there's your representation. The ostriches were in a relationship that was not going to work. You got two ostriches that they'd have to adopt their ostrich baby. That's fine. I would say, I just have an affinity for the Shrieker, the way that it broke the rules of the original one. And they at least showed that they were dangerous by eating Julio's leg Like that Julio leg eating is still horrifying to me. The way that I'm just like, God, that's probably the goriest, most gruesome moment in a Tremors movie for me. And that was what showed me, I'm like, oh, you can do a sequel, but change it. And it just became exciting again of like, we got to figure out new rules for these new things and new ways of getting through this. And it's not the same old, like, well, we know this works, so let's do this again or whatever. I mean, the Graboid, all of their designs are great. The ass blasters to me, just as a victim of their budget and everything, never became a threat. They were never very threatening. They're in there and they're like literally like holding the mandibles, and you know, you never have a moment of them really hurting anyone. It kind of knocks Miguel off, which another continuity movement I would probably change, I realize, is Miguel's death of just kind of, it's like, that's it. You deserve better than that. But yeah, Shrieker. I mean, I have a full Shrieker head up here. I wish I could pull it down right now, but I'm not unmounting it from the wall. He's up there. He's a dapper fella. Yeah, I love the Shriekers, and I love what they did for the franchise, and I love the exponential nature of just like overwhelming and self-replication, just very cool. They sound great too. I love the Shrieker scream. Sound effect is great. And they're cute. It's like cute but deadly, that kind of thing. They're like, well, we can't make these babies, they're gonna be cute. I'm like, oh, they're cute but they're deadly. I like them a lot.
That's always the worst. So then who's your favorite character?
My favorite character is probably Earl. Yeah. He was my man. I was very happy when he returned for the second one. Fred Ward, man, watch that man in anything. Remo Williams, you know, I love Fred Ward. He was a wonderful character actor. Very missed, very sad about his passing. Was really holding out hope that he'd return one day, but he just has this great everyman grumbly quality, but he's curmudgeonly, but you just love him. This just seems lovable. Naked Gun 33 and a third, him as Rocco Dillon. I love you, Fred Ward. I miss you, Fred Ward. And I would have loved to see him continue on as the franchise. And for me, he handled being the lead very well without having Kevin. Like that second movie, I was like, great. It'd been nice to have Kevin, but I don't really miss him. I think Earl is the solid planning. I think I relate to him more of like, plan, get this stuff, get your Roth IRA, do your investments, make sure that everything is going to be set for your future, so you're going to live comfortably. Don't just, you know, go and hope that something magical is going to happen for you. You know, have your plans and, you know, make sure all that. And he's so cautious in the second one, like his character of just like, I'm not doing this. Why did I do this again? God damn it. I'm so mad right now. Yeah, I love him. I love Earl. Earl Bassett is, he's my man.
Caitlin and I constantly quote this. It's a whole bucket. It's a whole goddamn bucket.
So good. He's like a scared old man at that point. And I just love how absolutely terrified. I'm like, yeah, I'd be fucking terrified of that situation right now. I just saw arms here, and it's not the thing that I'm like, I'm fucked. Everything's fucked. Why did I do this for money?
Why did I do this?
He's right there. I got him right there. My French. Don't worry. Bert's there too. We'll always love Bert. They're just a testament to really well-written characters that are really, really interesting and really fun to watch and feel real. A thing that I will always struggle with in my writing is to have real characters, because they're joke cartoon characters, a lot of them, but I love them.
So do you ever feel like you're not doing enough?
Yeah, every day I'm not doing enough. I'm not doing enough creatively or for the house and for life, and yeah, there's never enough. I have so many projects sitting in my head that I want to do that I'm like, I should be writing this and I should be doing that and I should be voicing this and, you know, all these things. So yes, 100%. I feel like I'm never doing enough, but I also have learned to enjoy the times and not be constantly living in the future of what's the next project, what's the next thing I need to be doing. I need to just enjoy the time that I have here and take more time for myself and family and friends. And that's all wonderful connections that if you're ever struggling to be creative or anything, go and live life. Go do it. Go to an event. Do something. Life is what's going to inspire you to be creative and come up with ideas that you never would have if you're just always working and trying to make everything work all the time.
Then, in irony of ironies, I'm just going to, we'll call this sort of the last question then. So what does the future hold for Zoran Gavojcic and Megan Gorman? I know she's not there, but I want to know what Megan's doing.
Well, I will say, you know, we're hoping at some point to start a family. I definitely have, that's something that I've always wanted. So we'll see how that turns out. Who knows if it doesn't work the goal fashioned natural way, then we'd look into adoption or anything like that. But I was born to be a dad. I very much know that in my bones that I am. I got big dad energy, as I say, and I'm very happy to. I love kids. Are the best thing in the world. They're the most inspiring thing in the world. And just hanging out with kids. I remember at family reunions and things like that, I would never want to talk to adults or anything like that. I'm like, I'm going to go hang out with the kids at the basement or pretend to be dragons right now. So I'm going to do that. I don't need to talk about work or whatever. I'm just like, I'm going to go live in a fantasy world for a little bit and just see unfiltered joy and sadness and emotions from all these things. Yeah, I love kids. So that's a big thing that'll hopefully be happening in the near future. And then project wise, I know we're coming up on 5 years for Social Media Asicus 3. I definitely want to do a third one. I've had an idea for a third one for a long time now. It's really coming down to Morgan Foster, and he's working on an album. So if he creates a song that works for it, great. If not, then I'll figure out something. I don't know. I mean, I would love to revisit hanging out with all those people and kind of put a finality to this bizarre love story that I've created between Carrie and Jason, like these two that I never thought would be in a relationship, but just work so well together. And I've created these lovable characters who never talk, really, aside from a couple like one-liners at the end, but for the most part, they're silent, telling an entire story silently. And emotionally is very interesting, and I love doing that. And how to communicate stuff without words is really good. So we got that. What?
I had to buy that t-shirt. I just bought that the other day.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, I found out you had a store, and I was like, well, let me go like check this out or whatever.
Yeah, no one knows I have a store. I do have, I think, lowcarbcomedystore.com is literally a store where you can get Social Media Asicus shirts and all that kind of stuff. I have some stuff from Unproduced as well. I'd love to do another Unproduced at some point. There's some scripts that I want to do. Jaws 3, People Zero, the Unproduced Jaws script, which I'd love to do with a bunch of voice actor friends. And yeah, I have so many projects that I want to do and things. I have a Critters treatment that I wrote with my buddy Michael Rousselet for another Critters movie that I would absolutely love Warner Brothers to, you know, look at if they weren't just firing people from their studio and there wasn't a giant strike going on and everything that was happening. I think Critters definitely deserves another shot, and got a really good fun idea for that. Got a horror movie that I'm writing that's kind of my Tremors. Not going to tell any more than that. I've got, you know, animated show ideas that I want to do. I have so many things that I'm trying to just make time for. But since Social Media Asicus 3 probably will get pushed, I am very much trying to do a side story for part 2. Basically, it would be showing Carrie's side of what happens. So while Jason's at the office, we see what Carrie's been going through, because there's a little Easter egg that I hid in the original filming that if you see Blade from Puppet Master run away, he's literally just runs away in the beginning of the frame, and then he comes back later getting, you know, stabbing the maniac pixie dream girl. There's a whole story as to why he's there that I have built in my head, and what's been going on with Carrie after the big fight with Jason. So I have a whole thing that I want to film with that, and I'm trying to actively get that going. So yeah, those are the more recent things that I'm trying to do.
I really want you to have kids out of all of those.
I would like that too. I very much would like to have kids. I am very excited for that aspect of life.
It doesn't do anything for me, but if you two could.
Well, you know, my friend once said that it's like, well, once you have kids, it's not about you anymore. And I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah. I don't want it to be about me anymore. I don't want to make, I don't care about me anymore. I'm like, I want it to be like, keep this thing alive and make it a good person. Yeah, I'll focus my energy. I'm very happy to do that. I don't fucking care about me anymore. I've been focused on me for far too long. I'm good. I'm good. I need to focus on other things.
You're going to write, direct, and edit your own baby. It's a whole thing.
Great. Yep, that's right.
So yeah, we're about done. I'll let you end it however you want it. You can talk about, actually, I guess that's plugging your stuff there at the end. But
I mean, yes. I mean, you can find me on all the social medias at Low Carb Comedy, LOWCARBCOMEDY. That was, and the origin of that name was, it was originally an improv group name that I came up with when low carb diets were a thing. And it just stuck to be like, ah, it's memorable. Low carb comedy, half the carbs, twice the funny. That's the slogan there that is not written anywhere, but on a website redesign that I never finished. But yeah, find me on the social media. I'm on Twitter and Instagram for however long Twitter exists, whatever. I'm still there because it's the best way of contacting and interacting with folks. I've been a lot more active on there. So if you have questions for me, anything, go ahead and ask me on the social medias. I will try and get back to you on that. My YouTube channel, of course, lowcarbcomedy.com will take you right to youtube.com/lowcarbcomedy. Basically any socials you can find me. TikTok, I have a private account because I haven't dove into that world yet. I exist. So you can request a follow from, you know, to follow me. But I'm not really active on there aside from some dead meat things that I've been helping out with for that. I'm very grateful for any fans, and especially everyone that's watched Social Media Ask Us now at, I think, 83 million views or something like that, which is insane. Not even people get that kind of thing. And if I'm going to plug any of my older stuff, watch my Monsters of Science shorts. God damn it. They are some of the proudest things that I have ever done in my life. I did 7 shorts of all fake trailers for mashups of famous scientists and monsters. So Frank Einstein, Galilaikin, Schrodinger's mummy. It's some of my favorite writing that I've ever done with my co-writer, Dave Schneider. And Lee Russell plays, who's Unhealthy Doug in the Social Media Ask Us stuff, plays all the monsters. He's my Lon Chaney. He's like, whatever it is, he's gonna be the monster. There is an 8th one that I would love to do, even though we kind of concluded things on the 7th. But I have an idea for an 8th that, you know, hopefully one day I can kind of reunite with everyone. But I love the black and white monster movies, and I love being able to do some really solid, just great Naked Gun humor. I love those things so much. So please watch my Monsters of Science series. It's on my YouTube page. There's a playlist for them. You can watch all 7 of them. They're very short, but they need love. They need love. They only got like 1,000 views, whereas the other Social Media Ask says like 82 million views. I'm like, please. Watch my, even if they're in black and white, they look real good. I love them.
I'll go and comment on them. I'll bump you.
Thank you. There you go. Bump them up.
Bump them. Which, by the way, you should read Steve's books on that, like black and white, like the Fraidy Cats and Fraidy Cats 2, if you like that.
All right. I'll give them a shot. I read the monster, Tucker's monster. Yeah, Tucker. I read that one. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I've realized I should catch up on those, the other Steve related things. I'm like, well, I need more Steve stuff. Give me more writing, Steve. Yeah, no, I will support that man in anything that he needs to do. I think he's great. He's a wonderful human and a very, very talented writer that I aspire to be.
And yeah, I second watching his black and white monster series to whoever's watching this. I was a huge fan of that.
Thank you very much.
That shouldn't have been as funny as it was, but it was just
which
too
one?
Cusper Reviews. It's not like...
Oh, the Narnia reviews? Sorry, last thing I'll say about that. The Cusper Narnia review, that literally originated because Cusper went and saw Narnia on his own. I didn't have anything to do with that. He saw Narnia on his own. He came home, he set up his camera, and he just ranted for like 40 minutes. And then we cut it down. I think he might have actually edited the original version of that and cut it down to what that first Cusper Reviews Narnia. And then I had him do it for the second. And the third one, I was actually in the room for that one, filming that one and helping out with that one. But those are very fun. They're unfiltered. So it is this man's opinion on the Narnia films that, you know, I don't know how well they've aged, but, you know, it was a different time.
But yeah, anything else that you want to get out there? This is the final.
I said all the things, and I am just very happy to finally be here. And I thank you for all of your support. And it was lovely to meet you at Tremors Fest. You and your wife are glorious, good people, as the Dead Meat Channel says. And I'm very happy that we got to finally do this. And thank you very much for everything you have done for Tremors.
I just run a podcast. That's all I do.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, but I hope that, like I said, I was talking to Don. He wants to do it in Austin, but I really want to do Chicago next year for Tremors Fest. So I want to bring Zoran and Steve and Michael back to their home state and really do it right. So
I will happily be there. If there's another Tremors Fest, I will be there, unless there's a baby on the way. That's the only thing that will stop me from that one. And I'll dress it as a little baby Graboid and carry it in, a little dirt dragon.
Yeah, other than that, thank you. It's been fabulous meeting you for the last year, knowing you, learning about you. And again, I hope to do more. I imagine our futures will be entwined in some aspect or another. You've got a Tremor script that you're already writing, I hear. Yes? Yeah, okay, cool. Great to hear. And I was just throwing you a bone.
That's fair. Yeah, no, I do not have an idea. I honestly don't know where the series should go next. So I have no ideas for a future Tremors thing. I will happily appear in a future Tremors thing and be eaten by a Graboid if that's a thing, but I don't have ideas for that. I got Critters ideas. That one I'm like solidly behind for another Critters. But you know, if someone wants me to write one, I'll figure that shit out. But I don't have any ideas off the top of my head because I'm like, they've done a lot. They've been through quite a bit. So
yeah. All right. So I always like to end. We'll end with the guest saying something. So would you say that thing, not the Bixby and not be good people, but what's the one other thing that you always say? And I thank everybody, but before we end, I thank everybody in my life and all the people that do the things, and you're all amazing. And the only one I care to actually shout out is Caitlin, you're great wherever you're at. I think she's taking a nap, but
not anymore. You just woke her up right now.
We have thick walls. But yeah, if you would like to end things with a final three words.
Mm-hmm. Let me pull my way through the invisible hole here. That's the one.